Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Hooray in inverted commas. That's right, guys. We're here chatting about a film as always. Hello, I'm Richard Nicholas. With me to have the conversation is Anthony Evans.
Hello.
And Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
And the film that we have watched and are going to discuss to create a podcast is The Rookie from 1990. And it was Anthony's pick.
It was indeed. And I want to put a blanket apology out just the beginning of this. I'm sorry. But I hope you were at least a bit entertained by just how absurdly absurd it is.
It is absurdly absurd. But just to make sure people aren't going and thinking, oh, I've heard of The Rookie. That isn't that a sports movie? No. Anthony's going to give the details, and you'll clarify, and then we'll all be on the right page. So, Anthony.
Okay, so The Rookie, which is released in 1990 by Warner Brothers Pictures, is directed by and starring Clint Eastwood as tough veteran cop Nick Polovsky, who is saddled with Charlie Sheen's by-the-book rookie cop David Ackerman after his partner is killed during a car theft investigation. Now off the case, the two must reluctantly work together in secret to bring down the gang of killer thieves. It was produced by Howard G. Kazanjian, Steven Seibert and David Valdez, and is based on a screenplay by Boaz Yakin and Scott Spiegel. The Rookie also stars Raul Julia, Sonia Braga, Lara Flynn Boyle, Tom Skerritt, Pepe Serna, and Marco Rodriguez.
Hmm.
And none of them are good in this film.
Uh-huh. Well,
no.
He's right.
Not even Raul Julia.
It's kind of a companion piece to my last film, The Kiss of the Spider Woman, because that also starred Raul Julia and Sonia Braga. But it is the complete opposite in terms of quality, because they are...
I'm torn.
They are... This is not their best little advert for Raul Julia and Sonia Braga.
Well, no, but, you know, there's certainly worse things about it. I mean, before we, you know, go on slamming it and slating different elements, what were you guys expecting before you watched it?
Well, I first watched it during, I had a bit of a Raul Julia month. But this one, he wasn't in it very much, so I didn't want to bring it into that. Plus, he's not very good, and that's not the things I wanted to highlight. But the first time I watched it, I was expecting your typical kind of Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry thing going on. So I was expecting something fairly...
watchable.
Yeah, like action-orientated, lots of one-liners, a few quips, people being very hard, like most of his films. But that's certainly not what I got, was it?
I don't know. It has that stuff, but it does it all wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like the people responsible for the better Clint Eastwood vehicles were very much missing in this case. I mean, obviously Clint Eastwood is partly to blame, seeing as he's in it and directed it. But it does fall short of being worthy of like a Dirty Harry sequel. Like, what's weird is it could easily have been like a comedy take on Dirty Harry. I think that's kind of what it wants to be, doesn't it?
That's what I couldn't work out. Like, for a lot of the film, I was struggling to figure out whether it was supposed to be almost a parody of his, or a comment on his, like, images as Dirty Harry, kind of like he did with Unforgiven, and his, and it being like his retirement as a Western star. But instead, it's just really weird and, yeah, and bad.
And that's why I put it to you guys, because I needed someone else's opinion on this, because I couldn't work out, like, was it meant to be like a parody of Clint Eastwood, essentially? Or was it just like all of his things just taken to an extreme that it's...
Maybe that he set out to make a parody and ended up like falling over and just making an awful film instead.
Like made less effort and didn't think to actually satirize anything, just made a poor comparison.
Because there,
it's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah, because there are extreme moments on either end where it's like, yeah, okay, this has happened now. This is obviously a parody, but then something later on happens, which is like so cruel and horrible. It's like, this is clearly not supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, it's so violent and it's so full of profanity, but in such a like, oh, are we allowed to swear kind of way? like
13-year-olds trying to sound hard, like,
yeah,
just overdoing it and just, yeah, we swear a lot because we're cops. It's like, why are you swearing in this context? It just seems kind of childish, odd. So I mean, you know, it is. I would probably rename it Dirty Harry, Time to Retire, like, because it very much is a sign that Clint Eastwood has become washed up. I mean, he's gone on since the 1990 to do loads of other great stuff, like directing and things, but this one was very much, oh, you shouldn't anymore. The other Dirty Harry films are good. Not the other, this isn't one. But you've done some great westerns, you've done some great cop movies, you've done some orangutan stuff that we're all a bit weirded out by. And now, stop. So Dirty Harry very much needs to retire in this film. And it isn't him, so I guess that's a bullet dodged by Dirty Harry once again. Yeah, so it's very cliched, isn't it? Just all the way through. It's like a textbook cop movie.
That was the other thing I couldn't figure out, whether or not it was done on purpose. Everything Clint Eastwood's character says is some kind of one-liner or bizarre joke that doesn't really make any sense.
Yep.
It's almost like it shouldn't have had Clint Eastwood acting and directing, but should have had Arnold Schwarzenegger in. It feels like he would have enjoyed it. It feels like Arnie would have loved to have made this film, but oddly, Clint Eastwood was like, yeah, this is for me, I'll do it.
Well, I did do some reading, and apparently it wasn't really his choice to do this. He was never, like, the first person attached. But he agreed with Warner Brothers that they'd let him make another film called White Hunter Blackheart if he then did this for them. And whilst White Hunter Blackheart turned out to be fairly critically acclaimed, and the film that he made after The Rookie was Unforgiven, which is probably his like masterpiece. This one,
which makes you forgive this film,
I can't help but think that maybe his heart wasn't truly in it.
His black white heart in a White Hunter isn't in it. I haven't seen that film, but I mean, should he have done it?
I have not seen it, but it is fairly acclaimed.
But should he have said yes to this just to make it? I mean, really, I think he perhaps... Oh, no, I don't know. It was worth doing in as much as... Nope, can't think of a good reason. I didn't hate the idea of Charlie Sheen and Clint Eastwood doing a kind of comedy thing.
They have no chemistry together at all. Whenever they have their like comedy back and forth stuff, it just sounds like they're reading lines off the script at each other.
It does as well. But what's weird is Charlie Sheen has some quite, well, supposedly emotional scenes where he's quite cross and angry, but he delivers them like someone who doesn't speak English first language.
Yeah,
he just seems to swear and curse and say the most cliched hack writery things you could put in a script badly. I don't know.
He's such a wet blanket in this, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's the thing, is the film expects the audience to just take that as written. Like, it breaks the rule of like show, don't tell. And it has a scene where they're in the car together, and it's quite late on in the film, where they've bugged Bulgulia's character's house, and they break each other down. They criticize each other and why they don't like each other. And they come out with all this stuff about how, like, Charlie Sheen's all by the book and he's regulations and stuff. He said nothing like that.
He's rolled with a lot of the stuff. He's rolled with a lot of the stuff that's gone on. They basically slag off, like, "You, I don't like your donuts. I don't like your face." Like, it is very. They've obviously established a lot that we haven't on
screen. Yeah. they've been having all these like adventures that we just haven't seen, and then we get to see the fallout halfway through the film.
Well, Charlie Sheen as the rookie, which, you know, is an okay idea. It's a very, it sounds like a good cop movie. Like, it sounds like that's a good title. Let's get into it. But then all it is he's got a tragic backstory in that he goaded his brother into jumping
off a roof.
Which, or something. Which the film like sets up as really kind of important at the beginning. It's like the first thing that we're told. And then it's mentioned like once again. And that's it.
And it's mentioned in such a way that it's as if the film remembers it suddenly towards the end.
It's reassuring us that he's got a tragic backstory. He must be a good guy. He's got demons because he feels guilt for his brother's death, which is sort of his fault. You could understand him being upset that his brother died from falling off a roof that he basically said, jump across.
It's probably what feeds his complete psychotic breakdown at the end that everybody just brushes over as if it never happened.
That's true. And it's just like, he's just otherwise, he's a privileged rich kid who defied his parents and went into the unhealth and safety filled world of being a cop and sort of might get killed for being a cop because it's dangerous. And his parents hate that because they're rich and they want him to just be safe. I mean, it's hard to paint the idea that parents wanting you not to die is them being jerks. But that's how it says they're horrible because they're rich and they care for him, and he can't be in the police. And yet he has gone through with it, and he's going to be the new rookie partner of Clint Eastwood's weirdly Polish character.
He's angry at them, but they're angry at him for joining the police and throwing himself into a life of danger, and he's angry at them because they're rich. And one of the things I noticed about this film, and part of probably what makes it so hard to get through, is nobody likes each other for the vast majority of the runtime. Everyone's either like shouting at each other or making fun of each other. Nobody's even Charlie Sheen and his wife don't have much of a connection. They really seem to dislike each other underneath.
It was a bit odd how he got kind of cross with her when she saves his life.
Yeah.
After he just drove a motorbike into their house, assuming that no one's behind the door, bursts in, saves the day, and then has to be saved by his wife. And it is cross about it because you should have kneecapped him, you fool.
Also, you fool who's never handled a gun before.
Yeah, I'm glad I saved you by getting in trouble myself. Again, could have been a great comedy at that point, but we were entrenched in tension by then.
But the way he comes charging up the road on that motorbike right through the front door, and he may as well be shouting at that point, "I have no idea what's going on in here."
Also, weirdly, on the way there, he has a bit of a drive through LA to get there because he's just twigged that his wife is in danger.
Maybe in danger, probably.
Is likely to be fighting with a baddie now, so better hurry up. But he drives across the road endangering loads of civilians to save time in the empty street. Well, I don't know why he drove through all those people.
Let's not forget that just before that, he set an entire bar on fire full of innocent people who had nothing to do with what was going on.
And that's a great scene. We haven't talked about the start, but that is a great scene because
so much happens in that scene.
I mean, I don't know why there's a bar that is all lit in red. I don't know who likes drinking with other thugs constantly red lit.
I don't want to get into it too soon, but my favourite thing about that bar is that it's all these like hard biker guys, and it's all lit in like deep red, and they're all like hard drinkers and smoking, and there's dogfights and stuff. But because a lot of them are Mexican, the music that's playing is this like upbeat samba Latino music.
My favorite part of him going absolutely nuts and like manning up because he got beat up by all of the people in this bar earlier in the film. He decides that he's going to somehow just beat them up this time by, I don't know, punching first or whatever. And he goes more than crazy because, like, at one point he's attacked by dogs, which we've seen be in danger but saved previously in the film. And then just shoots a dog. Oh, he's the good guy, is he? He's just going to shoot that dog. Okay. Yeah. He threw one away. Couldn't he have thrown the other one off? Nope. That dog's dead now. And he's still a good guy. And now he's going skits in a bar. And like... And just he just torches the place with, like, liquor goes everywhere, which apparently is the same as petrol when lit with a lighter. And he, like, grabs a drink, right? And he's got, like, there's, like, a bottle on the bar. And it's like, he grabs it because it's a stunt bottle. It just smashes in his hand, but he just still throws it after anyway. And they kept that in, just, oh.
The first thing he does when he, like, gets set off is the barman who's seen him before, like, calls him a derogatory term, and he takes a bottle of whatever, like, high alcohol content it is, you know, it's clear.
Yeah.
He gets the lighter, he takes a mouthful of it, and then blows fire into the barman's face.
He does.
Just thought, what? Were you in the circus before you became a cop?
And then he goes, like, Van Damme and Jackie Chan on them, and, like, beats them all up, and snaps a pool cue, and eventually, like, he gets the better of them, and like he just burns down the bar, and like, I don't know, it just, like, just to get information, which the guy could have lied anyway. He could have just made up an address.
Yeah, because he was terrified,
you know. And then when you've burned down the bar and you have to go back and find the guy and he's in hospital filling in a report on how you were, like, a brutal cop who attacked him, then, you know, I don't know, the guy was scared, he had his face spat fire at, so fair enough.
Oh, and the guy was like, you can't do this, you're a cop. And I just thought, yeah, not for long.
That's it. But, you know, that was one of the exciting scenes, right, guys? We sure loved that. That was great.
Oh, I did love it in a this is terribly wonderful kind of way.
But, you know, I want to go back to the start, because one of the things that wound me up throughout was it's so cliched, right? And it seems to be on a, like, trying to tick off every trope in every cop movie. And the first one is it rips off every Dirty Harry. Like, there's a kind of a tradition that in the Dirty Harry films, he has a... he usually has a partner he doesn't like because he's ended up getting his partner killed. There's a lot of partners being killed in the Dirty Harry films. And this one opens in the same way, where it's just him and some other, like, cop, this, like, old black dude, like, coming to the end of their they're doing a bust on.
He had 2 days left until retirement.
Yeah, did he actually have that? Are you kidding?
No. It's just that's what it felt like.
But he is played by a guy called Hal Williams, who I swear only ever plays cops in films. I've never seen him play anything else.
Yeah, well, they're on the case with Raul Julia's. Are they Puerto Rican, German gang? Well, I can't even remember.
No, they're just foreign. it doesn't matter where they're from.
Because I thought they were, like, you know, Puerto Rican or something. And then there was, like, a reference to him being German or something. And I was like, what?
He's supposed to be German. But the only way I know that is because I've read the IMDb page. Because his accent is...
abysmal.
Oh.
Abysmal. He's not, it's the Sean Connery from Untouchables kind of accent thing, where I see what you're doing at the beginning, but then as the film progresses, he's just slowly kind of giving up on it.
Although I'm just another Irish cop on the beat.
So I definitely think this is in the same class as that, of terrible accents.
It doesn't sound like he's trying. Every now and again, he says Z instead of the. And, okay, he's German then, I guess.
Yeah, because he's not mafia, because he basically slags off the Italians, you know. But basically, there's this Raul Julia plays a moustached, well, he's usually moustached, but he plays a moustached German, Puerto Rican, whatever, gang guy, who owns chop shops and steals cars and makes his money in that world of crime. And they are doing quite a nice setup, I think. The idea of having a one of those car transporters parked in the road, and loads of guys are bringing the cars to it, and it's a bit like a sort of Gone in 60 Seconds style thing. And you're like, okay, they're going to steal cars, and no doubt we're setting up for a stunt scene where the, you know, car transporter dumps off the cars to get away, like, make the cops crash and stuff. And they do that. It gave me what I thought it was going to do, but it's so why do you have to play the old card of getting your partner killed to set up the story? Like, why? I know it's called The Rookie, but can't we just... you know that the guy's doomed as soon as they're making
Like, as soon as he says two more seconds, they're gonna kill you. Well,
yeah,
we know what's gonna happen here then.
Yeah, it telegraphs it somewhat, but okay, his partner dies. Clint Eastwood shows token emotion. Like, himself just looks at him and goes, "Oh, sad." And then Raul Julia is off and decides to, you know, still leg it in the car transporter full of cars, scrape it behind the thing that the flap that's down so that sparks are flying out. I mean, it can't be hard to find a transporter sparking through LA.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, whatever. There's a car chase and it's that thing of the baddies are on the car transporter, so of course they're going to lob the cars off the back as a kind of rudimentary.
Yeah. I think it was a decent chase scene, but as soon as you saw the transporter running off with those, like, the flaps down and sparking, it's like, I know exactly how this is going to pan out.
Yeah.
It should pan out with them getting instantly arrested, like helicopters, loads of police should be on the case. No, Clint Eastwood in his beater car is going to catch up with them, dodge a few things, and drive in the back when it's empty. And what I did like was... When Clint Eastwood parks in and is all smug, right, I'm on the back of your transporter now. Raul Julia was like, guess I'll disconnect this and make sure it flips over. That was a good idea. I'll give him that.
Why didn't he call for backup at any point?
Because he was in a revenge-filled rage.
and he's just a ridiculously impossible character that could never, ever exist in real life.
I think what never is nothing... no one draws attention to it at any point, is that he's an exceptionally incompetent cop. He doesn't do anything right, and then when he's taken off the case, he just continuously breaks the law.
Well, it's the Dirty Harry format again.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's done with, like with Dirty Harry, he doesn't really care about the rules and law. He's got to get the guy, even if he has to break a few laws himself. And you know, that's a little bit Hollywood, but it works because they're gritty and kind of from a different era. I mean, you know, the sequels to the first one, questionable, but still all fun. This one, it just feels like there's a retired man going, shall I do the same thing I always do? And everyone, yeah, please do. And he went, I guess I'll do it. And I'll have a cigar in my mouth all the time like I'm some sort of Jimmy Savile figure. Just obsessed with having an unlit cigarette in my mouth.
Got a light. What's
that's his trope, JB. He always has a cigar, but he can never have a lighter because that's...
because he doesn't think to carry one idea. Around with him.
Yeah,
that's the really weird thing. And I don't know... because I don't remember it in Unforgiven. I don't know if it's just a thing that Clint Eastwood decided to do for this film. Is that he's got this repetition thing going on.
Mm.
Really... like heavy-handed repetition. The end scene where, you know, I'm going to spoil it, where the rookie becomes the new cop and he becomes lieutenant, plays out exactly like the opening scene after his partner's died.
They really want to hammer home the fact that he has become like Clint Eastwood now. Now that he has finished being the rookie, he is the one with the rookie, and he says exactly the same things. Not even like paralleling. He literally says all the he becomes Clint Eastwood's character.
He loses all agency and becomes a clone after his wife has left him because he's completely insane.
And it's as if Clint Eastwood is saying, yeah, everyone should be like my basically corrupt cop who does whatever he wants and flaunts rules and sense. And also, what had bugged me a lot was he's been trying to smoke cigars the whole time. And so now Charlie Sheen's character smokes cigars at the end. What? That was a habit we needed to emulate as well? You can't be a good cop unless you smoke. Like, oh, it's so dumb. And why would Charlie Sheen have any problem? Surely he'd learn that now that I've got my own rookie, I'll treat them nicer than I was treated.
Yeah.
But no, I've learned how to be him, so I will
I'm going to slam a door in her face, too.
Yeah, exactly the same. I did. It was funny when Clint Eastwood shoves Charlie Sheen out the room the first time.
Yeah, no, that was funny.
Coming back to more funny things, and possibly at the beginning, come on, there must have been some bits before the scene where it's all red and Charlie Sheen goes nuts and you go, this is a dumb movie, there must have been bits you enjoyed at the start to set up the film.
It's a difficult question. You know, there must have been bits of this film you enjoyed.
Auntie, do you have any, you know, come on, you must have some bits you like, I enjoyed this.
It's hard to define the feeling that I have for this film. I think it just surprised me so much that I'm just kind of blindsided as to how to feel to it. I know it's terrible, but it did it so absurdly that I couldn't help but be entertained by it.
It's you want to ask how you can make a film like this. Like, how does everything come together so wrong?
Off the back of so many, like, reasonable successes. Like, having done it before so many times, why this time you try and add a bit more humour in and it went so badly? It's like Clint Eastwood couldn't do the jokes. There weren't really good jokes in it. What passes for a good joke, I'll give an example, is, like, there's a bit where, 'cause he's annoyed... Clint Eastwood's character is roughing up people and he decides that he's going to intimidate one of the gangsters by sticking him in a car in the chop shop or whatever.
Oh my God.
And he picks him up in the car in a big magnet. No, that's it. He picks up the car with the guy in a big magnet. For some reason, the guy can't open the door and get out. And he just sort of bashes him around attached to this magnet and to make him, you know, give more information over. And meanwhile, Charlie Sheen is getting scared by some junkyard dogs who then he has a sort of, oh no, I got away from one, but now I'm locked in with another one. And then it culminates in, you know, Clint Eastwood turning up to Charlie Sheen, who's got a gun on the dogs, and he's just like, huh, read them, they're right. Well done. You know, he just makes rubbish jokes. Like
that whole scene with him getting chased by the dogs is done in such a naked gun kind of way.
Yeah.
Like, there's the shot of the tops of the cars and Charlie Sheen running away and then the dog chasing him. And Charlie Sheen is, like, it feels like he should be going, like, as he runs off. And, like,
But even like, Clint Eastwood's half of that scene, like, the way that it's filmed him, like, torturing this guy in the car is just so ridiculous that it becomes laughable. And this is why I was thinking, like, is this really a parody? Is this a big cliched parody of all the things he's ever made? Maybe it's a kind of... maybe it's a form of mental breakdown for him.
The comedy is so subtle that it just comes across as a terrible film.
It's not subtle. It's just not... it's like sort of not funny in a sort of bad way. Like, like Clint Eastwood all this time has been a brooding, serious cop in his films. And now he's like, well, I want to show I'm a fun guy. I can do jokes. And like, he must have looked at a Charlie Sheen and thought, oh, he's funny in his films sometimes, isn't he? And let's do a bit of shtick with an actor. And he just has these lines and they just land like sunny side down on the ground. And he's just going to go, why did you say that? Why can't you just be normal in this?
Some of the stuff he says, like it's later on in the film. There's one earlier here too, but I can't remember it. But as an example, the like his bizarre jokes when Charlie Sheen's character's dad tries to like buy him off to guarantee David's safety, and Clint Eastwood says like if you want a guarantee, buy a toaster.
Yeah.
What? What?
Because you can't. You know, I get what he's saying. You can't guarantee that someone's life will be saved, but it's just, okay, guy. I mean, it's like Clint Eastwood has been watching too many Republican rallies and has got all worked up about how if men were just men, they would save the world. And if we could just use our guns from time to time instead of filling out paperwork, things would get done properly.
If we could go to a bar and beat up some Mexicans and burn it down, then, you know... that seems to be what he's saying with this film.
He's just, he's too Republican in it. He's like a Republican's wet dream. He's old and he's sort of, he's an old experienced cop who does things by his own rules and he flaunts any sound like sort of sense and logic, and just fires his gun and gets stuff done the old-fashioned way by punching people and smashing them up in cars, and just beating up and, like, you know, never mind people's human rights and not recording them when you have no reason to. Let's just, you know, tap someone's house and listen in so we can barge in. And, like, one of the key moments where he kind of just says, look, when a man's a man, he can do what he wants. When Raul Julia has gotten away and has killed his partner and is, like, just having spaghetti bolognese in a restaurant or whatever.
Oh, like, that scene was ridiculous. I don't have enough. I need a thesaurus somewhere because I don't have enough words to express ridiculous anymore. I'm just going to keep saying ridiculous or absurd.
He just makes a point of barging in, trying to embarrass Raul Julia, who doesn't look that embarrassed. He's just, well, it's a bit
who
weird.
Are you? I don't remember you at all.
Yeah. Do we know each other? I mean, shut up. Like, I'm obviously not going to mention I stole a car transporter full of cars and got away last night, but I'm here with my, you know, hoity-toity crime friends, and he's just like, look, I don't care about your thinking you're powerful. I'm going to put my cigar out in your drink, and I'm going to send my order of food to your table for some reason and tell you to shut up. I'm on to you. I'm going to get you, because he's not afraid of baddies, is Clint Eastwood's cop.
I'm going to stalk you illegally for quite a long time.
Yeah, and surely then a more covert approach where you secretly spy on someone, they don't know you're after them.
Yeah, you don't come up to the table and tell them in a crowded restaurant.
Yeah, I'd arrest you now if they wouldn't just let you out the next day.
If I had any evidence of anything whatsoever.
Ah. But he's just so, like, I didn't understand. He sat down with Charlie Sheen initially at another table just to basically set up the idea that Charlie Sheen's character is a rich boy and for some reason gets preferential treatment, but maybe his dad owns the place.
Yeah, that was, they don't set up that he's been there before. They just, it's as if the waiter can smell the rich on him and therefore treats him better than anyone else.
No, I'll allow you to smoke, your friend to smoke, because you possibly have more money than I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you look richer than any of these other scumbags. So
yeah. So we'll, and then they just waste their time ordering something that sounds ridiculously like Rockefeller clams and steak or whatever, and then they don't even have it. It's just there so Raul Julia can have his hair muzzed by Clint Eastwood and told, "I'm going to get you," before he goes on his way.
It just look like he doesn't care in the slightest.
Very odd. And I mean, he spends the whole film not in any way, like, I mean, Clint Eastwood at least is in danger for some of it, because in a rare turn of events, the sort of lead, like, the experienced cop is taken hostage instead of, you know, the rookie or something. And it's just, I mean, what was just weird is they have a female henchwoman as well.
This is probably the most uncomfortable I've been watching a film for a long time. I don't want to watch Clint Eastwood get slow motion raped.
Oh my god!
But it's just, it's really horrible. Okay.
Some context: there is a female henchman. She's oddly looks a little middle aged. She has long black frizzy hair, and she's tough and can do martial arts because she basically kicks everyone in the face.
I laughed out loud the first time that happened because it came out of nowhere.
Oh, I think they were setting up, but they didn't until the scene. I mean, you could see that she was going to be the one to sort of stop him, but they didn't set up that she's like a martial arts pro or anything. But you say it came out of nowhere, sure.
No, when generic henchman number whatever, he breaks into Raul Julia's house or something.
Oh, yeah. And he's like bugging the house because he's been...
Yeah, and then Raul Julia's like, what are you doing in my house? And the guy tries to play it off as like, oh, I live here too.
I may have broken in and you're maybe my boss, but it's nothing weird about that. We're criminals. We break in each other's houses as like knocking.
Yeah, and then she's stood behind him, and it was just the way that they kind of threaten him a little bit, and then he turns around, and she just bicycle kicks him in the face.
Yeah. And then, so they basically dispatch with this guy, setting up that this woman is a harsh henchman that must be taken down as well as Raul Julia. Yeah. It's a weird thing, because there's a pseudo-relationship between her and Raul Julia, but like you mentioned, Jake, she sort of out of nowhere, once they've captured Clint Eastwood by, I think they probably just bicycle kick him and shoot. Shoot Charlie Sheen in the back, but obviously body armor, duh.
Yeah, it's the most telegraphed, clearly body armor, not dead scene.
Yeah. Actually, the whole setup to that is, so we've heard on the microphone, basically the guy who, you know, betrayed the other criminals set up a microphone that was illegal. Then Dirty Harry Mark II decided, I'm going to then set up a sting where we let them continue to rob the casino that they planned to off camera, and then we'll hide in the vault and arrest them with just the two of us. We'll just have guns on them.
And again, no backup, because we're not going to admit to the police force all this stuff we've been doing.
Yeah. And then the female henchwoman just fronts it out and goes, this rookie guy looks a bit scared, like he wouldn't shoot me. I think I'll just walk up to him. And then everyone's like, and then it's like, shoot him, kid. Shoot her in the chest or the face and just have her dead. And I'm going to roundhouse kick you. Ha! You know, like, she just basically fights him off because he won't shoot her. And I mean, it was a tough woman to just think, I'll just front it out, it'll be fine. But I mean, it works. And then they get away and they kind of get out of that trap by taking Clint Eastwood's character hostage. They just put a gun in his mouth and to his head, and they just walk out surrounded by loads of police.
Yeah, one of whom could have just shot him in the back at some point as they were leaving.
But Jamie, there were two guns on him, so how do you, like, one gun in the mouth, yeah, you might get the guy before he gets him, but the other, the woman has a gun too, you see. And also, a third henchman will just stand there completely redundantly, just following them out like someone who works there.
At that point in the film, I didn't actually know what Raul Julia was trying to do, but I was beginning to hope he would get away with it.
Well, he's in debt because he hasn't succeeded in stealing some cars and he hasn't paid some other associates, I think. He's in debt, so suddenly he's an idiot and needs $2 million from a hostage situation with one cop. And it's like, what, you're this rich from stealing cars, but $2 million, you find like that's enough for your hostage situation. I mean, it's such a weird thing. Like, this guy can't just, you know, shake the cops off and steal some more cars that night or something.
Why the hostage? Like,
well, he hates the guy.
Yeah, he hates him because he put his cigar in his drink. Where else did...
Well, he chased him in his car. He
has apparently been, like, on his case for a good while now. Apparently.
Yeah.
But why wouldn't you just report that to the other police, who would then say, oh yeah, he's bugged your house. That's very, very illegal. Let's kick him off the force and possibly put him in jail.
He doesn't know he's bugged the house, or he wouldn't have made his off-camera casino robbing plans. Because, you know, guys who nick cars also rob casinos.
he just does everything. He's Mr. Crime.
Yeah.
Who indulges... He's got his fingers in lots of different crime pies.
tasty crimes.
I think it's a real shame about the villains. Because when you first kind of are introduced to them, they have potential. Especially like with Raul. When you hear like, oh, Raul Julia's playing like the ridiculous foreign villain, you think, oh yeah, that'll be good. It'll be ridiculous, but it'll be good.
Yeah.
And I liked the look. Like, he had the kind of... He was always wearing kind of, like, crappy tracksuits. And, like, just horrible clothing. And I feel like at the beginning, he had a slight air of menace to him. And I kind of thought that worked.
Yeah, like, if at any point Clint Eastwood's character had been in... Clint Eastwood, even when he was held hostage and had guns to his head and they could have executed him at any time, he was just like... Whatever, I'm Dirty Harry, basically, so I don't care that you've got me and you could kill me and that, like... And then when he even gets to talk to the other police on the phone to prove he's alive, he's like, don't waste your money. I'm fine. I've got him just where I want him. And it's like, yeah, just kill this guy. You don't need $2 million. Just spend whatever money you've got now from your crimes, escape being killed by whatever other criminals need your money... And you don't need this guy alive for a hostage negotiation. How many times has it taken a hostage and requiring a delivery of money work anyway? Like, that never works. Forget it. Kill him now for being arrogant and move on with your tracksuit-loving life.
I think that what happens is he starts out as a cliché stereotypical sort of generic foreign criminal. And then as the film goes on, he becomes more supervillain because suddenly he has bombs.
Of course!
Yeah, it's like he's turning into M. Bison from Street Fighter. Which would have improved the movie immeasurably if he just played the same character in this. If this was a prequel to Street Fighter and he got away at the end.
Yeah,
he took his 2 million and he set up his own little country.
if he was being as ridiculous as everyone else was in this film,
yeah,
it would have been a lot more entertaining. And not just that, I really liked how they were setting up the kind of dynamic between the two kind of villains. Their kind of relationship and how it was kind of setting up that she's kind of sleeping around with everyone and he's going to find out and then he's going to flip his lid and they're going to turn on each other and then they just kind of
they don't do that.
Well, drop that.
Yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen when the scene where
we do have to tackle this.
I know. And
okay, let me explain. She is mental and and she's trying to intimidate him. There's also something about bullet-based necklaces I didn't follow.
Bite
the bullet necklace because it's somehow relevant to my relationship with Raul Julia, blah, blah, blah. But weirdly, she tears Clint Eastwood's shirt off while he's handcuffed to a chair and then is sort of trying to seduce him enough so that she could force herself on him. I don't really understand how it would work. All the time, Clint Eastwood's there like he's just in a waiting room. Just like, you won't intimidate me or arouse me. And then she seems to be really into it, just jumping all on top of him and somehow getting her rocks off, despite the fact that happening.
If anything useless, I cut off and throw away. So she's like, oh, it better work or I'm cutting it off. So then they have really, really like two close-up, slightly like muffled, noisy, drawn-out sex, and it's just weird and...
But he in no way wants to, but doesn't actually do anything. He doesn't stop her or really let it happen. It just sort of doesn't make sense.
And he's just this kind of... He's just wrinkly and red.
It's a good job she is middle-aged looking, because if it had been a young woman, it would have been too much of a vanity moment where, I don't even understand. Like, he's supposed to be the damsel in distress, in danger, and it's just somehow like kind of like he's patting himself on the back for still being attractive enough to seduce a henchman. It's so weird. I don't know why they put that in. And then, like Anthony was saying, when Raul Julia finds out that she's filming it, and it appears on all the security cameras, and he comes in, and there's a look as if, whoa, like he's about to flip out. And then he just kind of carries on as if, it's fine, she does this, she's a bit weird.
And then Charlie Sheen busts in, like the knight in a straitjacket, and sees it on the cameras, and then they're like, and he frees Clint Eastwood and he turns it off. And Charlie Sheen says, I haven't seen enough yet.
And they just make crappy jokes about how something weird happened.
Yeah, that's weird, David. Don't say that about your elderly partner.
Yeah. Being raped. Also, I would have assumed it was blackmail tapes or something. Like, I just what on earth would you admit? Like, you're like, seriously, what's going on? I thought they had you as a hostage and she's really having fun and you look really bored. What is going on? It's too late. The building's going to explode, so we have to drive out. It explodes just behind us. Then we land on a building and smash through like a window and land in like another building across the road. Which was kind of awesome, but also terrible.
It could have been really awesome. But then, like, preposterously, like, cuts to them. Yeah. And he's like, put your seatbelt on, like, mid-kind of jump.
The explosion is all around them. And they're somehow moving in slow motion. And yet Clint Eastwood can still turn to him and go, I said, put on your seatbelt. It's like... What's even happening anymore? What tone are you going for?
You care about putting on seatbelts, but also you want to force someone to get into cigar smoking. It's very, very mixed messages. It is absurd how they thought, oh, it would be funny if he said mid-explosion, put your seatbelt on. It's like, that isn't funny. That's baffling. That's what on earth are you doing? And it was so cliche as well, when Raul Julia has the flashing remote and he's just wiggling and going, I have a remote that will blow the building up. So weird and clean. It was just, are we in a pantomime now? Like, what is going on?
And the whole, like, power. This is, I have to say that this is in the second hour of the film. And this is one of those films that is, like, it's a 9-hour, 2-hour film.
Oh, yeah. It feels slow at times.
Oh, it goes on and on and on. And up until the end of the first hour, it's terrible, but it's moving at a reasonable pace. Stuff's happening. Mm. And then once it gets to that, the whole thing about Clint Eastwood being a hostage and then Charlie Sheen saving him by losing his mind.
Yeah.
is an entire hour.
They just have sort of rubbish where Charlie Sheen goes to his rich dad and interrupts a board meeting like a jerk and says, give me some money. And the guy's like, if you quit being a cop. And Charlie Sheen's like, no. Brilliant. So we haven't got the money, is it? But then later on they do have it.
Charlie Sheen's breakdown is just, it's incredible because it's, again, when you look at the comedy that the film has gone for previously, like all this, like, bordering on slightly wacky, and then he just has this break where he headbutts the mirror, and then he gets sinister when his wife's searching the house for him and she finds him just stood in the doorway holding a gun. And he just cocks it without saying anything. And then he's like, I'm going to sort something out. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Hurry back.
It is a bit like, well, maybe at least say, I have to save my friend, you know, or something. Not like, at least explain yourself, but not go out like a maniac, like you're a nut job on the loose.
I don't understand a lot of what. Like, he goes to the bar and he burns it down, beats everyone up there, shoots a dog.
Yeah.
And then he
just ends up in a dry cleaner's because that's where the guy said that the guy might, the one of the henchmen might be. And this sort of side henchman that's vaguely sinister, but fundamentally, I don't know, he looks a bit ugly and he's a bit Mexican and is that a scar or what? Like, and that's all his character is. And then there's a dead guy on the rack that's suddenly been turned on, dry cleaning.
My favourite bit about that was, this is just after the scene where Charlie Sheen has pretty much not cared about the lives of lots of people around him and has blown fire in a man's face. And then the body comes round on the rack and he racks like, dead body. And it's none of his sudden insane violence is in character in any way. None of it makes sense, like, versus who he is previously. I can understand if he's pushed over the edge, but he goes so far over the edge.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even like anyone he knows has been affected his partner's been kidnapped. Like. Yeah, an old man he doesn't like and sort of makes some crap donut jokes with him. Like, is suddenly in peril, and he's now not going to obey the rules and get involved in the case, even though he's not supposed to. That's always the case, though. It's always the guy in charge is like, don't go on this case now. That's exactly what he'll be doing, obviously.
It's also that he starts spouting the same bizarre, terrible, not even one-liner jokes. It's as if I'm now going to become this old man. I've been around for about 4 days.
But he doesn't. But Charlie Sheen, didn't quite have the same kind of caliber as Clint Eastwood. So even though Clint Eastwood has these ridiculous lines, he can still come off as like intimidating and hard. But Charlie Sheen really can't.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen can't even swear with conviction at this stage because he's a little bit babyface in it. He isn't the kind of winning, drugged-up, crazy man that went on to spawn so many memes. This is just young, potential Charlie Sheen. And if anything, I think his brother, Emilio Estevez, would have played that role a little more convincingly. Like, I almost think it was cast with the wrong son in brother in mind, you know? Like, I think Emilio Estevez could have pulled off a sort of young Clint Eastwood of the future character.
You're right. I think it called for someone with a a bit more... Because Charlie Sheen comes off as a bit too confident.
Yeah, I mean, it's Charlie Sheen is good and all, but he is better in like satires and comedies rather than let's take him seriously as a cop kind of thing.
He does comedy a lot better than Clint Eastwood, and the wrong person is trying to do the wrong thing in this film.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood should be harsh, as he is in all of his cop movies, and just sort of stern and bad and harsh. And then Charlie Sheen should be a kind of, you know, he could go for a more kind of Eddie Murphy, I'm going to joke a bit more and bring the funny a little bit. Whereas he's having to be this maniac who goes on, like, essentially a brutal killing spree or, you know.
I will say, there's a line, speaking of terrible jokes and one-liners, it's completely out of place. And it's in that laundromat scene where he goes through the door and he quotes the Candygram for Mongo line from Blazing Saddles.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, it's Candygram from it's in Blazing Saddles. It's like a play on the old like Looney Tunes cartoons.
Hmm.
But he just says it, and it's almost like he said it to himself as they were filming.
And there's no one there at that point. And yeah, it's just quiet. And there's no like laugh or like it's just no one in there. It was just like a rubbish line that no one heard.
Yeah, but Clint Eastwood like Sheen was doing it to entertain himself, and Clint was like. Yeah, that's funny. We should keep that in there.
That's a fun movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, whatever. It all culminates in that guy being dispatched. Basically, no. Is it at the dry clean? No, he gets away because they fight them out the window. That breaks the front of the window at the front of the dry cleaning store. And then all the pedestrians sort of are walking past and start stopping him and beating him up because the criminal goes... He was trying to hurt me.
Yeah.
And then they all just kind of stop him momentarily.
And it's that scene is... There's a lot of weirdly racist scenes in this film where you get just... Everyone who is bad is Mexican. And they all kind of swarm over the good guys.
Yeah. It seems like people who are in bars and on the street will just happily have a fist fight, just beat someone up because... Yeah. I don't know, they vaguely look the same race.
While Charlie Sheen is going on his GTA Rampage mission, there's a scene, and you have both must have made a note about this, because there's no way no one would...
Is it a particular line,
delivery of a line
said
yes,
by a certain police chief?
Okay, he's sending out two cops to go and look for Charlie Sheen. And I don't even know how to describe the delivery. Like, they're kind of like, I don't really want to go. Because apparently, when you're a cop, if you act like a moody teenager who doesn't want to clean his room, that's completely normal. And they kind of, like, shrug and they get up to go. And then he like, pushes himself up to the camera, and it's... He swears, but it's not a job, it's an adventure. Yeah.
It's the weirdest. I did not know what he meant. I was like, I was thinking about it in the next scene. I was thinking, in what way is it an adventure? Or have we set up an adventure movie? I didn't. What's the adventure by doing regular police work, looking places?
What it is, it's a weird reference. It's like, it's a weird reference to an old Navy slogan. Which they used to have adverts for. It's, you know, it's not just a job, it's an adventure. But I don't get it.
But it's so completely out of place, and it's delivered in such a weird... I don't even have any words to...
Yeah, it's bizarre.
...explore how he came up with the idea to deliver it that way. But he does... I don't know if... The only thing I discovered I know that actor from... Other than this, is Buckaroo Banzai. And he's the voice of a character in the PJs, which I've talked about before.
Yeah.
But, like, that's it. That's the only two things. And he's fine in both of those. But in this, he just delivers every line with this cadence that isn't human.
He reminds me, it's nothing to do with how he delivers it, but he reminds me of, like, a cop from Miami Vice. And it's almost... Like, they were trying to go for some kind of Miami Vice style. We're a little bit funny, but we get serious when the bad guys are killing people. And it was just this weird... sorry, did we miss the part where that line made any sense? And you had this character that would say that. It's, whatever. Like, blah, blah, blah. For some reason, the reasonable henchman has convinced Charlie Sheen's wife that he is the lieutenant in charge of the case or whatever. And he's in the house just making really convincing but slightly rubbish small talk with her. And then, you know, has to kill her. She twigs at the last moment, fights him off, doesn't get killed, and is saved by the motorbike crashing through the door. She ends up saving the day as well.
I think... it had they just been in front of the door when he came charging through, he could have killed two birds with one stone, because he clearly doesn't like his wife anyway.
All he does with her is wake up in cold sweats about dreams
and not answer her questions.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, were you having the dream about you killing your brother and then being questioned by people in a really dark room in the police force? Yeah, I was. It really weirds me out how they keep questioning me. Oh, I wish I hadn't killed my brother and his toy gun hadn't symbolically dropped and shattered into loads of pieces instead of us seeing the corpse of a child. Oh man, those dreams are getting to me. Well, bye. See, you're going to do police work. Let's not establish our relationship at all. You can just save me later on and I'll be a douche about it.
Yeah, we need...
Where are you going in the middle of the night with a gun? I gotta see about some stuff. Bye.
Yeah, we really needed more time with him and his wife, because it's just kind of... there's not any tension when she's actually kind of in danger.
No, because we don't know anything about them.
Not only that, but like the cops that are sent to go and get him are obviously meant to be like, oh, he's detained while his wife is being in danger, so there's supposed to be some tension there. But he just kind of shrugs them off easily. And it's almost pointless that they were sent out to go and get him.
Yeah, doesn't he? He handcuffs them, like, to each other, and then somehow they can't move?
Well, they're handcuffed to a door as well,
okay,
of a car.
Because I didn't notice that. So I thought he'd just handcuffed their hands together and then walked off, and they'd gone, rah, what are you doing?
Clothesline. Like, we got you. Well, whatever. There's actually a weird line that stood out for me as well was, oh, God, what was it? I had it a second ago. Oh, it was about... Oh, right. It was Clint Eastwood says Charlie Sheen is asking Clint Eastwood why he's so after this guy. And he's like, I know your partner died, but it can't just be that your partner died. It's like, well, why can't it be that his partner died? That's horrible. His partner died with a shotgun to the back. And they're quite old, so presumably they've been partners for a while.
Yeah.
And then the guy's like, yeah, well, I guess I also like racing a lot, and I always feel like I win rubbish races, and I want to win a big race. And it's like, what are you talking about? So this racing metaphor, you hate Raul Julia's character because you killed your partner. That's enough.
Yeah,
baffling. Where's the end of this film? We should get to the end and talk about.
Well, I got to this point after the fasten your seatbelt explosion scene.
Yeah,
and I made a note here that just says, "I hope Raul Julia gets away with it. I hope he gets his $2 million and gets away scot free."
Me too.
Because I was just rooting for the villain at this point.
And his oddly intimidating and scary middle-aged partner, hitman.
The weird scene where they exchange the money.
Oh, this is what I was going to talk about. it must be really baffling for the cops involved as well, because they basically have fake money, but then they get the millionaire's money. Charlie Sheen's dad's money comes through in the end. Yeah. So there's the exchange with a briefcase where there's loads of cops there, and then the guy, just a henchman in a van's like, I guess I'll pick this up and not be worried in any way that you're going to kill me. And anyway, he picks up, a limousine turns up, the real money turns up, and the guy takes the case. And then all that seems to happen is the Charlie Sheen and Clint Eastwood, who have escaped now, turn up and are in the van. Is that right?
Yeah.
And they're suddenly the ones with the guy picking up the money. And like, they see them as well. And it's like, hang on, why is the cop we're ransoming suddenly saving the day?
Let's all wait here and not chase after them and help. Let's just watch them drive away. Let's not intervene when the money changes hands, where this mysterious millionaire turns up and nobody explains anything.
It's just, And it's just like the guy we're paying $2 million is now suddenly taking care of things on his own, and isn't yeah? They don't even have him. We are waiting to find out where he is, or there he is, or he's got this. He's got this. Everyone just stand redundantly in the alley and let the van drive away. Maybe send one helicopter, and we'll all be confused when it parks up and they all hop down a drain and get away from all of the police in LA.
Let's all go and get some colourful donuts.
Yeah, because what is police procedure all about anyway? So, bafflingly, they end up in the sewers and back at some... do they go to a chop shop as well? Like, basically where they should have worked out he was... It's like his base. They know that now.
That was a little bit before. That's when Charlie Sheen finds out where they're keeping Clint Eastwood.
Oh, that's right, because the guy has an obnoxious green Lamborghini and Charlie Sheen has learned through Clint Eastwood's taste that...
The green is a horrible colour.
Yeah, green. The worst crime is painting a car that's obnoxiously souped up and pathetic and can't go... Like, that. Oh, it annoys me so much that I'm snooty about sports cars. A real man doesn't paint their sports car green because that's showy. Yeah, because having a sports car isn't showy when it's like speed limits and you don't own a private road. No, painting it green. Oh, that's horrible. How can you be a snooty about it?
Why don't you shut up about sports cars and actually do your job as a policeman?
Yeah. It's just... And anyway, Charlie Sheen works out because he's seen a car. That must have come from a place. The green car came from a place. I'll go that place. I've saved the day now. Where are we? They're in a sewer. How do they get from the sewer and then the money spilling out? They get to the end and it's like, why are we doing the end of Heat? When did Heat come out?
Oh, yeah.
It was the end of Heat. I don't know if Heat might have been a bit later, but it was pretty much the same. But... with none of the tension or dramatic chops of that film.
Watching Raul Julia run away in a boiler suit and giant white socks there was no tension whatsoever.
And how did they get from the sewer to the airport?
Raul Julia was going then disguised in the van, and somewhere between the sewer and getting the suitcase to them, like basically a van turns up and has the suitcase in. Then Raul Julia's like, thanks for the money, I haven't checked. You're dead. Who didn't see that coming? Yeah. I love to kill people who hand me money.
He says his catchphrase, goodbye. Like Anne Robinson. And one of my favourite little moments in there is when Clint Eastwood and Charlie Sheen catch up with him and they start shooting at him and he protects himself by raising the suitcase of money, which is essentially bulletproof, over his face and exposing his entire body as he runs sideways.
So they run across the airport in a scene reminiscent of Heat. And it's just because it's lamer. When the money gets shot and it all goes over the floor, Raul Julia goes back and sort of almost doesn't pick up, but then tries to pick up some of it and then goes, no, I can't pick it all up. It was it was stupid of me to be shot at and try and pick up a few handfuls of money. Like, he's there with I don't know, maybe a few $1,000s in his hands, nah, I should keep running, not be shot at. Yeah, I was greed, damn you.
They're chased by the plane. I will give that sequence credit because it did things that I think a lot of action movies wouldn't do, because they were running away from the plane in a straight line, and then as I was starting to think, why don't you weave, the plane's not very fast, they started to do it.
Yeah,
and then when I was thinking they
split up, and that's how the plane got plane driver who'd been shot at already had like, it's just this vengeful guy who was going to be arrested or die. So he's like, I'm going to run them over in my plane. And then kept cutting as well, because he was going across the grass and it was really awkward and presumably quite slow. Like, they couldn't get away, they could get away. And it kept cutting to the wheel as if, the wheel is going to break. And it just sort of, they basically just shot at him, really. Like, they sort of shot at him generally and it seemed to shoot him in the
thing is, the head. Plane was... The plane was driving on its wheels on the grass. It couldn't go very quickly. You could see it couldn't go very quickly. What they could have done is just turned around and run underneath it and gone the other way.
Yeah, they could have just done it. avoided the massive thing entirely. But they shot at it, and he got distracted and drove into another bigger plane and exploded.
Yeah, never mind all those passengers, though. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't actually explode. I think it just hit the wing of the passenger thing. But when you first see it, it's like, oh no, the way this film's been going, it's been so ridiculous. It could actually do it. It could actually blow up this whole passenger plane.
At this point, Clint Eastwood and Charlie Sheen have cost more in, damage publicly than the $2 million that they could have just given Robert Jr. Yeah.
I mean, $2 million isn't ambitious, really.
No.
I mean, I just don't understand why he wouldn't think, well, I'll just need to commit a few more crimes and avoid the police and, deal with it. Oh, whatever. But after we have a ground-based plane chase, which is a very lame thing in a sense. So this plane chase explodes. And then their climactic scene with the two final henchmen is on a baggage carousel. Because that is the coolest thing we can come up with.
Nothing says action movie like a decrepit Clint Eastwood chasing Raul Julia's moustache.
On a conveyor belt with luggage on the floor.
And I can't remember her name, Sonia Braga?
Yeah.
The woman, when her and Charlie Sheen chase each other, and then he just guns her down in public in front of women and children. You hear children screaming in the background.
And what's annoying as well is he had this done to him. She shot him, and it's supposed to be a sort of mirror because he says the same rubbish thing I don't know, you
amateur.
Amateur. Always, shoot in the chest, and then when they're dead because they don't have body armor on, shoot them in the head as well because you're one of those cops. One of those executing in public cops. So, and it's just amateur. You didn't shoot in the head, did you? I shot you in the head, and now you're dead. You can tick my vengeance off. Clint, over to you on the baggage carousel to stupidly get shot, despite...
Yeah.
The whole situation was dumb because he was basically shot... Clint Eastwood tried to shoot Raul Julia in the back, and the click of the gun not having another bullet in the chamber was enough to stop Raul Julia. And then he sort of stares at camera as if, "Maha, I heard a click." Yeah, he twirls his moustache and goes, "Now the ball is in my court, for I have heard your clicking of a gun not firing, and I know you're out of bullets. Now for me to shoot you with my gun. Bang! You are shot, sir."
But he shoots him, on the edge of his stomach. He shoots him as close to almost missing him as he possibly can.
Yeah.
Don't shoot him anywhere vital, like the heart or the face.
Yeah. Don't run away either. Now that he's not got no legs, you definitely know you can keep running.
And then Charlie Sheen turns up, and Ronald Julia has his back to him. He is there's a wide target area, but instead Charlie Sheen shouts his name to give him the chance to turn around.
Yeah.
And try and, so he gets hit in the shoulder.
Or the leg or something, was it?
No, it was in the shoulder, and he falls on the baggage carousel.
Oh no, I thought Charlie Sheen got shot by someone as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. Right. He shoots him in the leg.
Yeah, I do kind of like the scene where he's on the baggage carousel because Clint Eastwood then, who has been shot himself, climbs over Raul Julia, sort of mounts him at one point to get on the other side to sort of talk to him as they rotate round.
I think he's awkwardly clambering on, "Yeah, excuse me."
And Raul Julia's just dangling his legs and scraping along the floor as they go round. No, I'm in a good position. Let's carry on. What was I saying? I don't know. Let me take your bullet necklace and put that in my gun and kill you in the head. Bang, you're dead.
The best thing about that is Raul Julia's weird,
scream,
Yeah.
He just sort of braces himself and it goes on a bit too long. You think he should say something witty like, I don't know, "You'll never chop my shop," or whatever. Chop guys would say.
He looks like someone with an intense fear of heights is about to go over the top of a roller coaster.
"You may kill me, but cars will still be stolen. Cut off my head and two more cars will be stolen next
you
day.
Can't save all the cars, cop."
Yeah. I stole cars for Germany. But whatever. Clint Eastwood basically exchanges more banter with Charlie Sheen before he goes to sleep for a bit on his shoulder.
Oh.
Also, they exchange the line of, didn't I tell you to shoot for the heart? And it's like, well, A, you didn't. B, don't shoot for the heart.
Yeah.
And C, you can't parallel a scene that you weren't in, Clint Eastwood. He said something about, like, to Charlie Sheen's character, said something to his wife about trying to kneecap the guy instead of just murdering henchmen, even though they seem to be fine with killing criminals entirely.
I was aiming for his knees. And then, they say the same thing to each other, but, Clint Eastwood wasn't there.
And Charlie Sheen's like, I was aiming for his knees. Well, you're a terrible shot then, because you shot her and him very dead. Not knees at all. Very, very confusing mirroring. There's lots of mirroring, as if to suggest how clever are we. We can do a callback in our own film.
This is the whole, like, after Clint Eastwood, like, dies before 3 days passes and he's resurrected as the lieutenant.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen comes into the office and it does the scene from earlier when Clint Eastwood loses his partner and people say the same things word for word, you know, sorry about Nick. He always had it come in and you know, he's not dead because it's not that kind of film, but they all say things as if he's dead.
But
and Charlie
also
Sheen
as if
knows.
He's been promoted, because when you're promoted, you give someone commiserations.
No, because, but some of the things they say don't make sense in the context of him being promoted and the way they say them. So why doesn't Charlie Sheen, who clearly when he walks into the office knows that he's been promoted, why doesn't he say, what are you guys talking about? Like, why are you all being weird? This is weird.
Oh, but he doesn't know he's been promoted, because he walks in expecting other guy.
Yeah, you're right. But he also knows he's not dead. So,
yeah.
What are they all talking about? Like, and why is he not reacting?
Well, next time, Jamie, you get promoted or something, I'll be like, oh, sorry to hear about the death of the person who didn't die. Well done on that promotion. Like, it's just, I don't know, death metaphors and people getting promoted don't seem to be, I don't know, it makes about as much sense as I am, sorry.
Also, they made him a lieutenant? After all that?
Yeah!
Early pension is what he should have had. Or a late pension. He definitely should have retired now.
They kept them both on the force after everything they did. Charlie Sheen is clearly unbalanced.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a sequel, is it going to be a sequel where the woman cop who gets hired to be the new rookie, at the end of hers, she's destroyed some of LA and is then smoking a cigar and teaching the next guy to come along, who's presumably, I don't know, some kid in a wheelchair, because that's the only person she, as a woman, could look down upon. So it's like, oh, you're not, I'm sticking you with wheelchair guy, new person. What? And it's just like, don't worry, you'll blow up some of LA and we'll all be smoking cigars, remembering how awesome Clint Eastwood is. Oh, brilliant.
Oh. Yeah, why would you give that man that responsibility?
You at least want him in a desk job rather than out with a Magnum.
I suppose.
It's the safest bet.
Not the safest bet is to put him in jail for all the laws he broke.
Yeah.
And fire him for being a terrible cop. And Charlie Sheen.
And who is now has to go on living his life as if he is
Charlie Sheen, who has essentially died, the person we were introduced to at the start of the film is no more. He's now become a copy of Clint Eastwood's character.
He becomes Dirty Larry and is now off to commit terrible crimes, but it's okay because he's got a badge which isn't upside down. That was another brilliant callback, is a good way to tease someone if they're really good at passing their exams and a bit greed at being an actual cop. You go, if he's so good, why is his badge upside down? What, my badge isn't? Oh, you got me. You've made me look at my badge briefly. I'm so humiliated.
Ah, you got me. And then Charlie Sheen pulls out his gun and shoots her in the face because he's insane.
Yeah,
talking about other weird moments that repeat, was a really strange, awkward moment was when they each catch each other's punches.
Yeah.
Why are they trying to punch each other in the face? I don't know.
And this
just because they're a bit cross.
Yeah, and there's just like this awkward pause afterwards where you're like, what's happening? Is there some respect forming? Is there some sort of weird vindictive anger now boiling up inside them? And the moments just kind of like dissipate and carry yeah. on, and it's like, what it was that?
Also, who catches a punch? If someone throws a punch, you deflect a punch, surely. I don't know much about martial arts, but you don't grab the fist and hold it in the air. Like, also, who punches, gets their hand caught? Do they then try and continue to punch you despite you holding their hand? Like, oh, you've got to hold it back. You've got to stop my fist quivering in the air. I'm angry with you.
Baffling. This film is awful.
Baffling. But I think talking about it makes you realise how awesome it is to pull apart and laugh at.
It's the most absurd film I've seen in a long time.
It's such a surprise that it's directed by Clint Eastwood, because he's a good director. What happened? I mean, I know that's ridiculous, because lots of good directors make bad films, but this is a special kind of terrible.
You can just tell that he was like sleepwalking through another Dirty Harry film. Yeah, it's not called Dirty Harry. Dirty Harry the Rookie. Who cares? Let me just smoke a cigar and push bad guys into cars and shake them about. Blah, whatever. I rough people up however I want. I'm a bad cop. Whatever.
Me and Charlie Sheen can wear matching horrible shirts.
Ah, ha, ha, lads, banter. He also has a go at Charlie Sheen's character for wearing a suit, and it's like, oh, you idiot, you should dress like an old man like me. Because he does try, like, it isn't Dirty Harry that's sort of styleless because he's a man. Like, he doesn't, like, Dirty Harry's never, like, particularly fashionable, but he doesn't wear, like, weird old man who has no style clothes either.
Yeah.
So this guy, that's how he's different to Dirty Harry, is he dresses like a putz. It's just weird. Oh, whatever. Come on, guys. We need to wrap this up, have a rating, and put a bow on this podcast.
One more thing I want to say. It does have one sort of redeeming feature. It's got an awesome theme tune.
I knew that. I was hoping that's what you were going to say.
It really does.
The whole samba Latin
lift
music.
It belongs somewhere else. But
yeah, the lift.
Yeah. Really? You don't like the theme tune? I thought it was like...
Are we talking about the theme tune, or are we talking about the whole, like, somebody pressed samba on a keyboard and then somebody goes... on a thing all the way through, like the music in the Mexican bar?
No, not like that. Like, every time there's, like, a ridiculous kind of action moment, it kind of goes... it has a theme, like, a theme running throughout. And, like, that is pretty awesome, because it's kind of, like, epic, kind of, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The one that sounds like none of the rest of the music
in
the film.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It does have that, and that kind of gets you going, like, when it comes on, but I am, there is nothing.
It's almost like we could have had a Michael Mann-style film that's kind of gritty and about cops. And it's all very manly and over the top, but also kind of cool and tension-filled. Or we could have had a kind of more satirical, let's have fun at the Dirty Harry genre a bit. But instead, we just get a confused mess where people don't really try hard enough at all.
Nobody does. That's the thing. Like, no. Like, it's not like it's a cast full of bad actors. Just for this particular film, they decided they were all going to be terrible.
It seems as if the title is very apt. How I would rate it is... This whole film is The Rookie. Everyone is being a complete rookie. It's like they've never done anything before. It's everyone's first attempt. They've gone, let's do a cliched and hack script that we've made no effort with. Let's try and say cool stuff but make it sound lame. Let's just do everything by the book but badly, like we haven't got any experience. And it just does lack quality. And that's why the film is called The Rookie, not because he is a rookie. It's because everyone involved was a rookie.
The film itself is The Rookie.
Yes. So that's how I would put it. But I don't know what that leaves you guys to sort of rate it as.
I don't know, just something that just keeps being so unexpected and ridiculous constantly that it just kind of fries your brain. It's like...
To me, it's... I don't know. I would say it was like somebody's lame dad who thinks he's hilarious, who likes Hot Shots and cop movies like Dirty Harry, thought, I can do this.
I'll show you what a good film is.
Yeah.
It's something like, do you know those kind of hidden camera shows, kind of like Beatles About, where you've got like an unsuspecting person and like and you just try and make something weird happen to them and just see their reaction. It's like that, but if they just kept doing it and didn't stop and tell them that actually this is fake until they actually had a mental breakdown at the end.
Like Charlie Sheen and Clint Eastwood being punked. They kept making a film and they kept doing really weird stuff in it and throwing them off by going too far, and then they kept going and kept doing it.
Yeah, but never letting you in on the joke at the end, and then you just kind of go crazy. Because all this
it's almost like the audience
happening.
The audience has been tricked by a kind of set-up camera show. We've started watching it thinking it's going to be a cool comedy thriller, and it's just ridiculous and just blows our minds. And we're like, I can't believe they've done this. Ha, it was a big joke. The satire was on you, the audience. So it is a rookie, it is a dad, and it is some kind of candid camera type show that's just a ridiculous prank that went wrong. But it's not a prank, it's a film, and it's probably on Netflix, so check it out.
Don't ever watch it.
It will give you a feeling that you will never have felt before.
I felt nausea plenty of times.
No, in terms of, I don't know, it's just like my brain couldn't compute, and I've never kind of like felt that way before. So it's a unique experience.
I would say it isn't a unique experience because I've watched too many films where I just go, why? And that makes no sense. And this is stupid. And why must everything not obey the etiquette of films? And yet at the same time, clichéingly play up to them all. It's baffling. So I've been baffled before. I can't say it was that unique for me.
Oh, fair enough.
Sorry.
I just think it was just, it just kept throwing me on loops where it was ridiculous that I couldn't help but laugh at it.
It was funny. I did laugh, probably not at the jokes it made, but yeah, the fact that it was a ridiculous long joke.
I could never recommend it to anyone. But I could.
Well, thanks for recommending it to us.
I needed to. It's like therapy. I needed to air this out.
Share the pain in it.
Well, we've shared our pain. Let's all not learn anything and review a terrible film again next time and become what we said we shouldn't be and snap a cigar and then fail to have a lighter. And, oh my gosh, what were the jokes about in this? Unfathomable dad jokes. That's what they were.
There was one thing I laughed at. And
genuinely.
Yeah, it was like a TV report. And Clint Eastwood was like giving his thing and he just kind of like swore. And it's like, well, that was really kind of obvious, but it made me chuckle a bit.
When he was at the scene of the crime after he'd done the bust on the Chop Shop guys, I love the fact he was loading it up directly for the criminal to see and go, I know you're probably watching this and I'm going to swear and this is going to be unbroadcastable in a sense, even though they did broadcast it. And yet I've passed on my message and gloated. I did like his gloating. That was a good joke. I will let that in as a good joke.
The only one.
Well, all of that rambling on said, that's the end, right, guys?
Yeah. Well done, everyone. Well done.
Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
It's not just a film, it's an adventure.